Recalibration Matrix is sponsored by Discount Games, Inc. and Muzon Minis. Discount Games, Inc. offers the maximum allowed discount on Marvel Crisis Protocol. When you order $30 or more, you will receive free domestic shipping. Visit us at www.discountgamesinc.com. Muzon Minis creates the highest quality gaming accessories. You can buy our product at www.museonstore.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recalibration Matrix. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me, as always, is your friendly neighborhood,
quarantined Greg Webster.
That doesn't sound like nearly as much fun as the normal Greg Webster.
It's not.
It's not.
No. I mean, it's kind of growing on me. Like, it's just, I get to cook a lot more. I get to paint a lot more. But, yeah, it's, I mean, for me, this is my fourth week of being quarantined.
Uh-huh.
So, like, I believe I've been out of the house a total of 5 times. Like I've gotten in my car 5 times in 4 weeks to go do things.
Oh, that is very different from my quarantine experience.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on situation, right? But I imagine that we're all in different situations than we normally would be.
I do probably. So Brian and I go to Gameopolis regularly, obviously, to do shipping. Mm-hmm. And we will try to find places where there aren't people so that we can do a walk outside in the afternoon. And then I go to the grocery store probably more frequently than I should. But that's my... I spend a lot of time outside of my house currently.
But social distancing and...
That's true.
At least,
yes.
Right?
It is. Okay, it is isolating, et cetera.
Yeah.
Any other... it seems like every episode's has some sort of quarantine or coronavirus tie-in. Is there anything else that we want to say about that before moving on?
No, not really. I would like to share that on Facebook this week, it was kind of revealed by Atomic Mass Games what Corvus Glaive, Proxima Midnight, Gamora, and Nebula would do.
Yeah.
Which is important because, like, we should be basically playing with those models by now if the normal release schedule had happened.
Yeah, they would have released by now.
Yeah. Yeah. And then for some reason, because Asmodee basically said if we release them, a lot of local stores won't be able to sell them. So Asmodee has made kind of this blanket decision, like, not to sell the new products and to, like, freeze their line. And that's how they're going to, you know, number one is they're saying it's going to help local stores because they won't lose sales. I mean, the other side of it, right, is then their employees don't have to go to work. But there, interestingly, there were a couple regions that received them still like normal, but it looks like they're in like New Zealand and Australia got the models released. So we've got to see all the cards and the stats this week. So it's just, you know, it's unpredictable, like, how supply lines are being affected. And
it's true. It is cool to see the new stuff. I did have a friend who was, like, kind of grumpy, like, how are all these people getting cool stuff and I'm not? And like, well, sorry.
That's how Europe feels all the time.
Right? Yeah.
Why is America getting everything? I believe it was the Asgardians took 2.5 months to make it to Europe. So, you know, it's too bad, but...
Yeah, poor Americans have to be the ones to wait for once. We'll have to do what we can to muddle through. But this week, we are going to have a discussion about Loki. So do you want to go ahead and read through his stat card for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So Loki is a 4 threat, right in that sweet spot where we're seeing a lot of really interesting and powerful characters go is 4 threat. On his healthy side, he has 5 stamina. He's a medium move. He's a size 2, so normal human size. He's got 3 physical and 3 energy defense, and then he's got 4 mystical, which makes sense. He's always kind of a spellcaster character. All of that stays the same on his injured side. He is the only character that has 3 different type of attacks so far, where he's got a physical and energy, and he's got a mystical attack. His physical attack is just the normal strike that after it's resolved, he gains power equal to damage dealt. His energy attack is a frost blast. It's a beam 3. It does 4 dice of damage, so not a lot of dice, but it's a beam, so it kind of makes up for it. And after it deals damage, any character touched gets slow. So that's another nice thing. It doesn't, it only needs to deal 1 damage, but if it does, it's going to give slow. So it'll give out slow pretty consistently, and it doesn't cost anything. And then his mystical is illusions. It is range 4. It is 6 power, it's 6 strength. So you're rolling 6 dice, and then it's 3 power. And this one has something really interesting where it has 2 wild symbols. So instead of normally you have 1 wild symbol, you need 2 wild symbols to trigger Mesmerize, which is the special ability of illusions. So if you get 2 wilds, you get to trigger Mesmerize, which says after it's resolved, you can advance the target aware character its speed. Really cool. After the advance is resolved, all other characters within 2 of the target characters suffer a damage. So you basically get to advance the target, and then it does a burst damage on everybody nearby. I really like that he has 3 different types of attacks, and that they're all pretty interesting in their own way, besides strike, which is just, it's fine. He has 5 different superpowers, so it's pretty intense. The first one is called I Am a God. It costs 2 power.
Could you say that again?
I am a god!
Excellent, thank you.
No problem. So it costs 2, and it says, before rolling attack or defense dice, you may use this superpower. During this attack, this character adds blanks in its attack or defense rolls to its total successes. So by paying 2, he can count blanks as successes, which is pretty interesting. You cannot reroll. It doesn't... If you pay it once, it only affects the next attack, so you can't do I Am a God and then reroll, get all the frost blast beam attacks, because they each count as separate attacks. But I think it's pretty useful, more for defense, I would argue, than for offense. He has another ability called Trickster, which is cost 3. So this is, I think, one of his really cool powers. When he's targeted by an attack, you can use Trickster, and then he makes a short advance. If at the end of the attack, he's outside of the attack's range or line of sight, the attack ends. If it's the attacker's activation and the attack did not target multiple characters, the attacker may make another action. So what I really like about this is that Loki can basically nope out of an attack sometimes by advancing away. Or by walking behind, like, a piece of terrain and blocking line of sight to him. Only being used once a turn is sensible. I will say I Am a God is usable more than once. He also has the Asgardian rule, which all the Asgardians have, where he gains an additional power during the power phase. I'm going to talk about Gembear first. He has Gembear, where he can take the mind gem or the space gem. Currently, as the rules are written, you can only take one, so he can't take both of them, but he could take the mind gem or the space gem. We currently don't know what the space gem does, but he does come with the mind gem, so that makes it easy. And his other superpower is called God of Mischief. While within range 4 of him, enemy characters must spend 1 power before using any active or reactive superpowers. So what's really cool about Loki is that when he's damaged, God of Mischief gains an additional sentence. So not only do you still have to pay one additional power to use your superpowers, but it says, additionally, while within range 4 of this character, enemy characters do not roll additional dice for critical results.
That seems pretty good.
It's real good. I mean, what I really like about God of Mischief is it just poops on everybody. There is no character that God of Mischief isn't annoying with.
That is true, yes.
I think it's really important we talk about the gems as well. The mind gem is all we have for now. But so, real quick, in case you have not checked out the recent rules update on the PDF, and you don't own, I believe it comes with Loki where it explains how Infinity Gems work. So Infinity Gems are basically upgrades to the character. The gem takes a character slot in your roster of 10, and then when you are building your squad, you can choose to bring the gem with Loki. So each gem increases the threat value of the character. So the Infinity Gem, the Mind one, is a cost 1. We know that the Power Gem is another one that Star-Lord can take. That's a cost 1, a threat 1. But for example, the Time Gem has been previewed. It comes with Corvus Glaive, and that one is a threat 2. So they're not all threat 1 gems. Some of them are going to be more based on how useful they are. So the Mind Gem is a threat 1. So when you take Loki right now, you can make him a threat 5 by taking the Mind Gem with him. And so the Mind Gem basically adds a new superpower onto him. It adds an ability called Mind Gem, which costs 2. And it says, choose an enemy character within 3 and advance it short. So basically, he can just auto-advance an enemy character within 3. In addition to that, just bringing the Mind Gem with Loki gives him an additional power in the power phase. So if Loki had the Mind Gem, he would gain 3 power during every power phase at the beginning of a round.
That seems pretty good.
I have played games where I wonder if it's worth the 1 threat just to give Loki 3 power every turn. And I honestly think that might be worth it. It's pretty impressive.
It is kind of interesting. One of the things that jumps out with me with Loki when I look at him is that I start looking at where I would like him or what affiliations. And it's really interesting to me that the one that probably jumps out at me the most is the one that, like, kind of storyline wise doesn't really make that much sense. But it seems like he just really likes Captain America's leadership a lot. Am I wrong on this?
No, I keep coming back to, like, Loki to me is a really good Avenger. So a couple things about Avengers, right? There are no Mystic Attacker Avengers yet. Right. So he fills that role with illusions very nicely. Avengers really love reactive superpowers or superpowers that they're likely to use every single time they attack or activate. So for me, I'm looking at him, I say, okay, he's going to use I Am a God every single activation if it costs 1. And then defensively, he has 2 really good defensive superpowers that will cost 1 or 2, and with the discount from Avengers. And even if he takes the Mind Gem, it reduces the cost of the Mind Gem ability down to 1, which is incredible. Like, advancing an enemy with a short advance for 1 power is always worth it. I think that first instinct is definitely a good one.
Do you think that it's enough that it's going to edge out Asgardians as the most popular place to take this character?
So I haven't gotten as many games as I want with the Asgardians, but I have gotten enough for me to safely say, like, I think he's equally useful in Avengers and Asgardians. I really love Odin's Blessing. Which is an Asgard, which has the Asgard keyword, so you can only take it if you're in the Asgard affiliation. I even when I was first making lists, I thought, is Odin's Blessing unaffiliated? Because if it is, I would take Loki and Thor in Avengers with Odin's Blessing, because if you have two characters that could potentially use it, it's probably going to get used. But it's not usable in an Avengers team, which is too bad. I don't know. It's hard for me to say, but I really think I prefer Loki in Avengers, just because I personally prefer Avengers right now.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'll preface this with is the same thing that I said previously, is that a lot of this is, for me, is somewhat theory machine, because, you know, my models were getting painted, and then the quarantine came, and I haven't really had as many games as I would like, which I'm sure is the case with everyone. But when I look at this, I think that part of the way that it looks to me as well right now is that, you know, previously there was a lot of debate for people between like a single affiliation roster or a dual affiliation. And, you know, I don't necessarily have a strong feeling one way or the other with it, but I do think, and we've talked a little bit about this as well, but I do think that it feels like Avengers is kind of coming into its own now with the size of the roster that they can take, and you can have a single affiliation Avengers roster that can have a lot of versatility and not feel like you're necessarily telegraphing what you're going to be playing as much as some of the other single affiliation rosters. And I think that Avengers is just overall in a really good place right now. So that's one thing that maybe helps out Loki and Avengers, is that, you know, Avengers is just in a really good place and has a lot of play options. There isn't really a competitive scene right now for people to be making like declarative statements of fact as to which is best or whatever. But if there was one, this is just me making a wild guess, but if there were, like, if let's say that there was a 64 man tournament that was going to take place tomorrow, it would be interesting to kind of conceptualize, like, what would the percentages of that field look like? And my guess is that you would see, and let's do as a caveat, say that leading up to this, people are well practiced with everything that's released up to this point, and so there isn't like a experience issue going on with any of it. People can play whatever they think is going to be strongest. It would be really, really interesting to see like what the breakdown would be in an event like that. And my gut feeling right now is that that there would likely be more Avengers players than Asgardian players, and that the affiliation more so than whether or not Loki's better in Avengers or Asgardians ends up being the more important deciding factor. I don't know. What are your thoughts with that? Are you still on mute, Craig? I can't hear you saying anything. Are you?
Okay, I was on mute. I'm sorry.
Yep, you sure were.
That's some good podcasting. You're going to edit this out, right, Jay? You won't leave this in? Jay, you'll edit it out?
Yeah, it's totally going to be edited out.
Oh, thanks, buddy.
The long pause will be edited out.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Okay, good, good, good. Nobody will know my embarrassment. And this won't go on the internet.
I even asked if you were on mute.
Yeah, and I said on mute, I said, no, I'm not on mute, and then I started talking. I am not a podcasting sophisticant like you, Jay. I'm a blushing bride who's still learning the ropes. Anyways, so my thoughts on this. Avengers, I keep coming back to how strong the leaders are. I think all of the leaders so far have proven to be really strong on their own and just very like interesting pieces, with the exception maybe of Star-Lord, but we can talk about that later. And so like Thor, Black Panther, and Captain America, being like part of the core choices, like who will go best in what scenario. And then with the additions of Vision as this really interesting like ranged attacker that can be really nimbly pimbly, with the addition of characters like Venom that are just weak to energy attacks, and Avengers having multiple really good energy attacks, people picking up more the defensive crisis cards seem to be pretty popular, like Gamma Shelters, and I think the Avengers have a lot of really good reactions to it, and a lot of choices in what you take. I really do think Avengers has a lot of like really cool choices, and Avengers gets to play more with the new pieces. I would probably say in my local meta, Cabal is more popular though.
Right.
Because of the feeling that because of the way power ramping works, the more power you can, the more damage you can deal, is probably the bigger advantage. And so I think it's important that we look at Loki in Cabal as well. I think as a mystic attacker, Loki is just hands down worse than MODOK, and he's potentially the same cost, right? Like he's 4 or 5. Let me ask you this. What do you think of Loki in Cabal? He is affiliated in Cabal, so would you take him?
So it's kind of an interesting question, because on the one hand, obviously for damage output and abilities to like throw stuff or move character stuff, although I guess the mind gem gives you an element of that as well with Loki. In those areas, MODOK is better, but it feels like MODOK doesn't have some of the disruption elements that Loki has, and so it's a question of how much you value those and how much you're taking advantage of them. Like it kind of seems that you can't have Loki be standing back, not in the thick of things, or at least it feels like to me that if you're going to maximize Loki, you need to have him up and having his power that's increasing the cost of other superpowers affecting, and when he's wounded, stopping explosions on dice. It feels like that's a really important part of his gameplay, and if you're not using that, then it seems like MODOK's just better. But it seems like if you are using that well, then, you know, it's kind of tough to say. It feels to me like MODOK is the lower skill cap piece, where he is just an innately powerful thing that you're going to have a hard time messing up or not getting some good value out of. Mm-hmm. But it feels like, on the other hand, with Loki, it's a little bit higher skill cap. And the hope is that if you get really good with this character, that he ends up becoming a really rewarding character to play, and is as strong or stronger than MODOK once you master him. And one thing I'll also say, I guess, continuing that thought, is that in a lot of the other miniatures games that I've played, I've definitely noticed where when you get really good at a high skill cap model, and then you play against someone who isn't used to playing against someone who's really good with that particular model, they're just going to be like completely flabbergasted with what's going on, because they'll be like, oh, I've played against Loki before, or X high skill cap model before. And then you just start doing things with the model, and they're like, I don't know what's going on here, because this is nothing at all like what I've experienced in the past. And this is just like running, you know, loops around me. And I think that that's one potential upside with Loki as well.
I like everything you said, Jay. I kept comparing like Loki with the mind gem to MODOK and trying to figure it out. And I did kind of come to the same, like, you have to be better at keeping Loki alive to get his God of Mischief bubble to be like really useful. And so I even like was trying to think about what tactics cards to try to keep Loki alive might be important. I think if you just want a Mystic attacker, you take MODOK. Right. But if you're more interested in something a little more flexible, you might consider Loki. But yeah, I think Loki's a lot harder to keep alive than MODOK is.
Yeah. It seems like you need to get a little bit better at playing with terrain or blocking line of sight or doing various things that... And it's kind of interesting with that too, because one of the things that's interesting in this game versus some of the others is that in other miniature games, a lot of times a common tactic is you will just move behind some terrain and block line of sight or whatever. And in this one, doing that can potentially like be setting yourself up to get stuff thrown at you. And it can, you have to kind of be thinking a little bit ahead as far as who can kind of counterplay that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go ahead and switch gears, unless you have a closing thought on Loki that you want to go over.
It's mostly just my curiosity, because so Loki at 5 points is kind of scary, like losing him. And I've been wondering, like, what if the space gem costs 6, makes him cost 6, right? What if the space gem costs 2? And it worries me because I'm not sure I could put 6 points into Loki and feel like it was a good investment. Yeah. So I've been thinking about that. The Infinity Gems make list building a lot more interesting, but they also add a lot more like risk onto the characters you give them to. So I think it's pretty cool. But yeah, I have been wondering, like, would I take Loki if he was 6 points? I mean, maybe, right? If the gem is good enough, but I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about Infinity Gems and trying to wrap my head around them, and that's one thing I'm really excited to like see as they unfold and figure out like what place do they have.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and start talking about our comic book club. And so this is a continuation of the arc that we were doing before. Do you want to go ahead and dive in and give us some information on that?
Yeah. So so last week we started reading Thor by J. Michael Straczynski and illustrated by Olivier Coypel. This Thor was kind of a rebooting of Thor after he died and all of Asgard died. In the previous one, basically, Thor woke himself up from death, and then went about finding the other Asgardians. And when we ended, Thor had basically flown into space and summoned a magical lightning storm that woke up all the Asgardians on Earth, so that basically every Asgardian who fell during Ragnarok is back. So this one starts with Thor basically he's so exhausted and weakened that he needs to go into what used to be called the Odin sleep, where if you've seen the first Thor Marvel movie, he gets so exhausted, he has to go into the Odin sleep and get his powers back. Except now it's Thor, so it's the Thor sleep. So they put Thor into this protective coffin so that nobody can attack him. And he's basically got to rest until his powers come back. And while that happens, Donald Blake, his human half, his tethered soul, goes to visit Jane Foster. And it's a really interesting thing because Donald Blake and Jane Foster had a romantic relationship, but Donald Blake basically, he wasn't real. And so when he disappeared and wasn't in reality anymore, everybody forgot about him but Jane. And so it's this really weird situation. So Jane is apparently like told Donald that like when she realized that he was coming back, she divorced her husband, and her husband took her kids from her. And Donald Blake is, he's like, well, I'm looking for Sif, and really upsets her, like it should. Because I don't know, and I'm wondering about this, because I was like, is Donald Blake an asshole? Like, does he not, what? And he, it basically feels like he's just Thor's, like, an appendage of Thor here, where he's just trying to do the job for Thor and look for Sif. And it turns out Sif is in the cancer ward, where Jane Foster is, because we see later that there's, like, an old dying lady, and in her, the mirror's reflection is Lady Sif, who is the one Asgardian who hasn't come back, and there's something wrong. And then we go from there, and we see Loki scheming. And so basically, and I mentioned it last week, but what's really cool in this story is Loki doesn't tell any lies. So Loki's had a lot of different titles over the ages, and like Loki has been called the God of Lies, the God of Mischief. A lot of times the God of Stories, like Loki is just a catalyst to move stories forward in a lot of the stories. So like in some of the modern comics, Loki has tried to say he was one of the original Avengers because he tricked the Hulk into fighting the Avengers, which started the Avengers. So Loki was part of the founding Avengers is a thing he says. Like it's like, oh, it's just helping you. So this Loki is, has told Baldur that, you know, you are Odin's son, just like Thor is, and you have just as much of a claim on the throne of Asgard as Thor does. And why is Thor keeping this from you? Why isn't he telling you? And so you see Baldur kind of like losing his unshakable trust in Thor. And so when Baldur confronts Thor, he's kind of ashamed, and like he's just was trying to figure out why he wouldn't tell Baldur. And Loki pushes for, well, we need to publicly declare that Baldur is a prince of Asgard now. And like Thor doesn't know what to do. It's really interesting because there's just these like quiet pauses. But Thor is going with what Loki says, because what Loki says is the right thing to do, right? Oh no, yeah, I should recognize my half brother. I should make sure he's a prince of Asgard.
It's kind of funny. It seems like Loki's preferred tactic in these arcs is basically confronting people with the uncomfortable truths that they don't want to face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, and so Loki is causing mischief by revealing the truths, and it's really cool. And so, you know, we see more of the Broxton, Oklahoma city, that like the Asgardians are living in. And we get to see, who is it? Bill, the waiter from the cafe, kind of having a relationship with the goddess Kelda. And there's just all sorts of these like really fun moments in this. The whole time we start to learn that, like, you know, Loki's still up to no good. It looks like Loki's positioning Baldur as like the new leader of the Asgardians, while Thor is away adventuring, and like Baldur is the one who is going to like establish and keep things under control. But Loki's still out to do bad. And by the end of this arc, we can see that like Loki has kind of exerted a lot of like influence, and that the Asgardians aren't just going to like stay peacefully in Asgard. And then we get to see that Loki goes to Hela and gets Hela to send her into the past. And it's revealed that like Loki time traveled into the past to kill Odin's father so that Odin could leave him in the snow and be dead, and then Odin could be the leader. And then Loki influenced Odin to take Loki away from Laufey and make Loki his son. So Loki time traveled to make sure that Loki was adopted by Odin, which is really a weird, like, time travel loop, I guess.
yeah.
That Loki put himself in. It's very strange, and it, I guess I totally skipped over the beginning of this, like, the issues 7 and 8 are basically Thor visiting Odin in the afterlife. And Odin is, every day Odin fights Surtur, and Odin and Surtur die, and then they get back up the next day to continue their battle. And so Thor tells Odin, like, well, I'll bring you back and break your curse. And Odin says he chooses to stay there because if he leaves, then Surtur will return, and this keeps Asgard safe. So it's kind of this, like, nice moment where it shows that Thor isn't just abandoning his father like Odin abandoned his father. Have I missed anything, Jay? The fact that it was, like, so many branching storylines with so many main characters made it a little hard.
Yeah. So I guess a few of my thoughts on this arc. So I did enjoy it quite a bit. I thought that Loki was quite interesting in it. I did. What's the name of Thor's alter ego again?
Donald Blake. Something?
Donald Blake. Okay. Like, I just don't really get that whole thing that's going on at all, basically.
Okay.
And, like, maybe if I'd read more Thor comics or something, that would make more sense why they're doing it. But it just seems kind of weird to me.
I don't get it either. Because, so Donald Blake wasn't a real person, but now he is? Or he's like a piece of Thor that stopped existing, but now he exists again? Because I don't think he was like, I don't think Donald Blake was like born, right? I don't think he has parents. He was a false, like, human created by Odin to trap Thor on Earth when Odin cast Thor out. I'm not really sure it matters, Jay. Like, it might just be one of those weird, like, it's back because it's like a classic Thor thing.
Yeah. So I guess another way that I think about it as well, it is like, so it didn't make sense that much to me. But then I kind of tried thinking about it, as far as, like, why Marvel would have done it or what storytelling purpose it has. And, like, my assumption is that they kind of felt like Thor had a kind of a narrative weakness where they felt like he couldn't connect with modern characters or something. I don't know. I mean, do you think that that's accurate, or?
I think it was originally created so that Thor had, like, a secret identity.
Okay.
I think that's its original purpose, you know, like, oh, well, all, but, you know, and this is the 60s and 70s, that all superheroes have a secret identity. So Thor has to, even though Thor is a god, he needs a secret identity. And in this comic, it uses that, like, lost secret identity is the reason Thor is able to come back to life in the very beginning, is that, like, Donald Blake has existed in nothingness. And that's how he's able to, like, wake Thor up. And then Thor is able to, like, wake up all the others. I feel like they probably should have, I don't know. Do we need a humanoid version form of Thor who has his own personality and memories? I'm not really so certain of that. Like, I think we could have gotten rid of Donald Blake.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, though, that he is, like, he does try to, like, fix things with Jane Foster, right? And Jane Foster is an important character because, obviously, she's going to be related to, like, get Lady Sif later.
I think that's, I guess, probably some of the reason why I have a bit of a hard time with it ties back to my connection with the MCU and the Thor movies. Mm-hmm. And, like, I did some of the parts that, like, caused some of my biggest eye rolls were the kind of the stupid trope with Thor, where, you know, he's at the diner and he's like, wench, bring my mead or whatever, and just acting very much like the Viking out of time or place or whatever.
But, okay, I'm gonna pause you there. That was my favorite part of that movie.
Yeah, of course it was.
It was so stupid. I loved it.
Of course it was, Greg. Anyway, I'll try not to think less of you. But as there started being Avengers movies and Thor movies, etc., like, it got to a point where Thor was having relationships with people on Earth, and he was interacting on Earth, and it wasn't an issue as it went on, and it got to the point where, like, you got to Thor Ragnarok, which I guess wasn't on Earth, but he's just a very different character than at the start of the MCU movies, and it feels like, at least from this little snapshot in the comics, like those two characters are very different, and the comic book Thor is still very speaks like he's from Asgard and acts like he's from Asgard and doesn't really feel very assimilated to Earth.
Yeah, and I think that's something that they've wanted to keep with Thor, is that he's not assimilated. Mm-hmm. He's always kept himself aloof. Like he's always been like, that's being earthy is almost beneath him. Which the next Thor story we're gonna read, there's a part that actually surprised me. Because we're gonna read an 80s Thor comic where I'm like, oh, he is keeping up with Earth trends. That's interesting. So, but like, yeah, the classic Thor is very much separated from the modern world. And maybe that's why we need Donald Blake, so that Thor can use a cell phone sometimes.
Maybe. Okay, well, I have quite a few more topics for us to discuss about this comic book arc. So I'm looking forward to that, but we'll go ahead and do that in our bonus episode. So before we do that, though, is there anything you wanted to say about this comic book arc to wrap things up?
I like Straczynski a lot. I think I talked about it last week, but I think he's got a really interesting way of making ridiculous things seem grounded and normal. And I did kind of like, there was the part where like there's two Asgardians having a duel to the death, and then they don't realize that they're actually going to die because right. they're more mortal on Earth. And so one of them dies, and then there's a funeral, and, you know, everything's like, all the Asgardians are kind of somber, and the whole time Loki's like, yes, how can I use this to reveal dark truths? Right. But no, I think it's so cool how he made Asgard's floating over Oklahoma seem so normal. It was cool.
Okay. So we'll have lots to discuss in the next episode, but before we go, Greg, why don't you thank the people who are supporting us on Patreon?
Oh, so the people that support us on Patreon are some of the finest warriors of Midgard, and when they pass in glorious battle, the Valkyrie will come down and take them to Valhalla, where they will forever drink the mead of the great goat. Oh, shit, I can't remember its name. Damn it, I was on such a good roll. But they will feast and drink in Odin's hall.
They will end up throwing their horns down on the ground and yelling for mead and telling the wench to come here.
He said, bring me another, first of all. That's all he said.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, well, thank you everyone for listening, and stay tuned for our bonus episode.
Yes, thank you. Oh, and next week we'll be reading Civil War from 2006, issues 1 through 7.
Yes, so we decided that we wanted to talk about the Civil War arc, because it seemed like we kept bumping into it everywhere with this, and so it made sense to do that. We're not going to do a character focus this next week. Instead, we'll have something else in surprise for you. But we wanted to finally read Civil War so that we could have that as a reference for our future discussions.
Yeah, so that everybody can know how bad Iron Man is.
Yeah, whatevs.
He's a bad boy.
Okay, then.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.